And a very happy Memorial Day to you and yours, Joe Rose, celebrating our country's freedom by going to France. Okay. Danny Rabinowitz, he had a busy day at the Air and Sea Show yesterday, the Hyundai Air and Sea Show, so he's taking the day off. He'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, you've got Alex Dono and myself, Dan Day, a little Dono and Dan Day in the morning on this Memorial Day. And first things first, Dono, of course, we thank the great men and women that have fought so bravely to protect the freedom of this country.
Yeah, I mean, I hope it doesn't get, you know, lost on too many people. I know you get distracted because you're spending time with your families, your kids are either off school or depending on where you live, maybe school's already over and you're barbecuing, you're grilling, you're at the pool, you're having a good time. But I mean, this our freedom was founded on heroes, a lot of whom, you know, did not come home from the wars that they fought in. And you know, I mentioned this, Dan, and I'll say it again. I am here because my grandfather, who served in World War II, did come home. And I thank God for that every single day. And let's keep that in the back of our minds today on this Memorial Day. And Dan, I'll also throw a shout out. I doubt she's listening, but it's my sister's birthday today.
Nice.
Daniela, happy, I don't know how old she is. I don't want to say how old she is. We don't do that here. She's a little older than me, actually. But happy birthday, May 26th. So it's a big day here in my family.
Oh, that's absolutely wonderful. An extra special day for you, Dono, and of course myself. We love the freedoms that this country has offered us and for everything that it stands for. Well, not for everything, but for what it stands for the most part. We're always very happy. Nobody's perfect, but it's really great to just celebrate this day and to be here with you, just to have the freedom of speech, to speak on the radio and have a great time. So let's make the most of it today. And we got a lot of good things to talk about. The Panthers are as good as advertised. I was going to say better than advertised, but I would say we kind of expected them and want them to be back in the finals and expect them to possibly be raising another trophy. So they are living up to that. This past weekend, they basically just took the soul, it seems like, of the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yes, that was not close. Game three, which I really thought was going to be one that maybe Carolina comes out with so much more urgency, but the Panthers completely negated them, Dan. And, you know, the game was close. It was tied until relatively late. And then the Cats go off in that five-goal explosion in 9 minutes. I mean, somebody pointed out during that game, you know, there were times this past season when the Heat didn't score 5 points in 9 minutes. And the Panthers went out there and scored five goals in a nine-minute span to take that commanding 3-0 lead. And then a lot of the same storylines for tonight. I mean, game four, a chance to close it out. I mean, closing out series are not easy. You remember going back to the Toronto series, Panthers had a game five at home with the opportunity to close the Maple Leafs out. And I think they got shut out 2-0 in that game. And so, you know, then they had to, or that was game six, I should say. They had the opportunity to close it out at home. Then they had to go to Toronto and dominate 6-1. In a game seven. So closeout games are not always easy, and Carolina's going to be playing basically YOLO hockey tonight, right? This is their last opportunity. But I'm kind of hoping, Dan, that the Panthers can use some of Carolina's aggression against them tonight, because you know what we saw in that third period when the Panthers took control of game number three, a lot of turnovers in the neutral zone, a lot of takeaways for the Panthers with Carolina pressing that Florida was able to capitalize on. I mean, just such an organized, structured hockey team, our Florida Panthers. And they're also in Carolina's heads. I mean, when Matthew Tkachuk went to the penalty box after roughing up Sebastian Aho, he's pointing to his head. We are in your heads, guys. They cannot match the Panthers' physicality. They cannot match the Florida Panthers' hockey acumen either. I think the Cats are going to get it done tonight. I think it's going to be a little closer than the last couple games have been in this series. Probably going to come down to a goal, maybe a two-goal empty net type of situation late, but I think we are going to close it out tonight.
I totally agree for all the reasons you just said. Number one, we are the better team. That's just plain and obvious. Number two, we have the experience. We have the closeout game experience. We know what we need to do. Paul Maurice even said it after the game. You can't go out there and try to win the whole series on one play, on every play. You got to go out there and just stay the course and do what you have to do. So they have that experience. They have that calmness. They have the talent to do it. And then, of course, yeah, I think what's going to eventually happen is the Carolina Hurricanes are going to start pressing, and that's going to cause sloppiness here and there. And there's one team that'll take advantage of you whenever you make these big mistakes and whenever you get sloppy, and that is the Florida Panthers. So they get sloppy. And then, of course, they're going to give up the rope. They're going to let go of the rope eventually. It's going to be time. They're going to realize, what are we doing here? And they're just going to give it up and kind of give. I think it'll be close for a while, but it'll kind of be a little bit like the game three, where it was close, put up a good fight, but the second something starts really breaking towards later in the game, the Florida Panthers way, I think Carolina Hurricanes will see the writing on the wall, and it's just too much. It'll be just too much. There's a point in every athlete, and I know not professional athlete, but every athlete, where you come to a point in a game or a season where you say, yeah, this is it. And I think Carolina's going to get to that point at some point tonight. Maybe not at the very beginning, but maybe middle, later stages of the game, where they're going to finally just realize there's nothing they can do.
Well, I mean, their mentality is going to be tested, because every athlete says this, Florida Panthers say this, and I believe it because they are experienced enough, having gone to two straight Stanley Cup finals, working on their third. You know, even some players who are new to the organization, like Brad Marchand, has, you know, played in big series and final series, so they have so much experience there. They have that one game at a time mentality, right? Is Carolina able to keep a one game at a time mentality? Because in the back of their brains, they know the Florida Panthers have literally four opportunities to close us out and win the series. If they don't do it tonight, two nights from now, they can close it out in five. If we're able to extend it, four nights from now, they can close it out in six. Or, you know, I know that if, God forbid, the Panthers were to drop three straight, knock on wood, I don't think that's going to happen. But then you can still close it out in game seven. We saw that happen against Edmonton in the Stanley Cup Finals last year, where the Panthers took a 3-0 lead and ended up closing out the series in seven. So, you know, Carolina, it's hard to keep that one game mentality when you know basically your next mistake is going to cost you a series. Yeah. Like, there's no more margin for error left down 3-0. And on the Panthers side, not only is the team absolutely clicking when it comes to the skaters, you know, even when you have an injury like Sam Reinhart, you're able to, you know, plug Boqvist in, and it's like you don't skip a beat. I mean, the goal that he scored in game three was one of the best individual efforts we've seen so far in this series. But between the pipes, Sergei Bobrovsky has, you know, been absolutely a revelation really since the first couple games of the postseason. You know, maybe they're going back to maybe the first couple games of the Tampa Bay series, looked a little shaky, but overall Bob has been absolutely dialed in and zoned in. We always know in order to win a Stanley Cup, you need to have hot goaltending. And, you know, I could say, and obviously the other series, Dan, out west is far, far from over. But boy, did Skinner play really well in the Edmonton net yesterday, because, you know, they were tight. And, you know, Edmonton ended up blowing Dallas out 6-1. That game definitely got away from Dallas in the third period, you know, kind of like, you know, the Panthers game. Three victory against Carolina, because I was watching in the second period of that game, Dallas was really dominating. They were putting a ton of shots on net. Skinner was turning everything away. And then, you know, it was tied 2-1, Edmonton up. You know, they were able to get a big late second period goal to go up 3-1. And then the floodgates just opened in the third period. But like, Dallas outplayed them for long stretches. They just couldn't get the puck in the back of the net. Connor McDavid could. He scored twice in that game. And so, you know, of course, on that side, if you're any Panthers fan out there, you want to close out our series tonight and get the sweep. And then you want that other series to go seven games, if possible, so we can get 11 days off between series.
Yeah, we talked about this. The Panthers are so crafty and they're so experienced, and they played more hockey than any NHL team has over the past 3 years, whether it comes to regular season, postseason, and of course the Four Nations face-off. It seemed like our whole lineup was in the Four Nations face-off. It's a team that you don't worry about the rust. Once again, they've even been through that situation too. Look, Matthew Tkachuk didn't play the back half of the season. Brad Marchand comes in at trade deadline. Seth Jones comes into the trade deadline. The team acts like they've been playing together for years. So I wouldn't worry about 11 days off. In fact, I would embrace if we could possibly get 11 days off. But getting back to Sergei Bobrovsky, when you said he's really been a revelation and really been playing well since basically the playoffs, I thought you meant since the Boston Bruins series 2 years ago. Remember going into that? We talked about how Sergei Bobrovsky was kind of had been a bust here in South Florida, and how, and then even at the beginning of that Bruins series, we were kind of like, since then, he has been lights out. He is on basically, now it's on a 2.5 year run, or at least 2 1/3 year run, where he has just been lights out, especially in the biggest of big games. Isn't that amazing? The switch just flipped all of a sudden for him with the Florida Panthers. Of course, he had a great career going before he got to the Panthers. Like I said, a little wobbly at first. But ever since the end of that Boston Bruins series 2 years ago, he has been outstanding.
Yeah, and what he's done literally, Dan, because this is, you know, I've heard hockey analysts talk about this. I'm not speaking out of turn here. What he's done over the past 2 years is transform his legacy from one-hit wonder turned bust, because obviously he had some great years in Columbus, but certainly not enough to, you know, forge a Hall of Fame career or anything like that. Comes to Florida with high expectations. First couple of years, he looked like a bust. So he goes from that. He goes from bust to cementing himself as a hockey Hall of Famer within 2 years, because that's what he is. I mean, he's about to make his third straight trip to the Stanley Cup Finals, being an integral piece of this as the, you know, starting goaltender on a team that's already won one championship and is possibly about to win another. And his career's not over. I mean, he's going to have more opportunities to climb higher on all the all-time lists. So, yeah, I mean, Sergei Bobrovsky is going to be a hockey Hall of Famer. And a couple of years ago, it was looking like it was going to be a much different story for him.
Absolutely. And, you know, you don't win last year's final without that game one, the Sergei Bobrovsky game, where he absolutely just shut down the Edmonton Oilers and all their stars and kind of set the tone for the entire series. But, yeah, you're right. You think he's one of those guys that, you know, you kind of mentioned when he moved here to South Florida, that kind of mentioned maybe Hall of Famer. Let's see how he does. Now you're sitting there looking. He's won a Stanley Cup. He's been to 2 Stanley Cup finals, probably go to 3 Stanley Cup finals, maybe even win more than one Stanley Cup. And you say, yeah, that's no doubter. This guy's going in. And I guess you got to give a lot of credit to Roberto Luongo for a lot of reasons, because we know Roberto Luongo pulls a lot of the strings, especially with the goalkeepers. But to have the patience to stick with Sergei Bobrovsky when there was some, I'll be honest, there was lean times. I was at places like Funky Buddha, which is the official craft beer of the Florida Panthers, one of their watch parties, and also I do trivia there on Monday, and there was a lot of Panthers fans there saying he's a bust, he's a bum. Now, this is back before Sergei Bobrovsky became the legend that is Sergei Bobrovsky, but at his beginning stages here at South Florida, and it's just amazing. Roberto Luongo and the Florida Panthers stuck with Sergei when they could have traded him. They could have found some other way to move him or get rid of him. They had Spencer Knight. They've always had pretty decent backup goaltenders, but they believed in him. They stuck with him. And once again, it's just the Panthers making another right, correct move. And the more and more correct moves you make, it shows you the more and more likely you are to win championships.
Yeah, and it's one of those things when it comes from the front office on, you know, down to Paul Maurice, they push all the right buttons from ownership, Viola, Sifu, to Bill Zito, the general manager, to Paul Maurice on the bench. You trust that brain trust to get the most out of their players. And that includes a goalie who was, and I don't know what it was for, I don't honestly, they should do a study on Bob, you know, the roller coaster of his career. Cause I still don't never heard like a plausible explanation as to how he got so out of form for multiple seasons and then basically got back to his Vezina Trophy quality self that he was in Columbus. Like, I don't know if it was mostly mental, psychological, physical, what it was, but you know, the fact that the Panthers organization, and you're right, people like Roberto Luongo helping him break out of that funk, but also having the patience to stick with him and not, and part of that was necessitated, I'm sure, by the contract. I mean, that was looking like an albatross there for a while. So, but you know, so maybe you could say they were forced to be patient with Bob, but it all paid off in the end. And you talk about a career arc for him. And, you know, anytime you mention somebody like Roberto Luongo, I'm so happy that he's still part of this organization the way that Louis is, because, you know, all the great years that he had, you know, individually great years, because a lot of the years when Luongo was great, you know, the skaters around him at Florida were not so great, but he loved this franchise. I mean, even when he left the franchise for Vancouver, his heart was always in Florida. He came back, you know, he was traded back for the twilight of his career. And, you know, for this team now to have won a Stanley Cup, you know, even though he's no longer between the pipes, but for him to be a part of the organization, you know, the joy that Louis had, I remember him eating pasta out of the Stanley Cup last summer when he got his turn with the cup. It's like, even though he's no longer technically out on the ice, like you still feel like Roberto Luongo is part of that championship and he's going to be part of the next one. And those are the guys you feel so good for. You know, Bill Lindsay in the broadcast booth on the radio side, who, you know, had that. He came close to winning a Stanley Cup. He got to the finals with the 1996 team that got swept, unfortunately. But guys like that who were, you know, foundations of this Panthers organization and can now, you know, enjoy, you know, seeing, you know, decades worth of work to bring the team to where it is right now. I'm so happy for guys like Luongo.
And looking at the other side of the playoffs when it comes to the NBA, the Knicks not being the Knicks last night. They flipped the script down by 20. Carl Anthony Towns, who only had 4 points in the fourth quarter for game two, scores 20 points in the fourth quarter for game three. So now the Knicks have lost two games at home, won a road game, and this next road game in Indiana, which is going to be tomorrow night, gets very interesting all of a sudden.
That would, I mean, you had Jalen Brunson in foul trouble. You know, he was able to come on, you know, late and be, you know, part of that effort. But it was Karl Anthony Towns, like you mentioned, Cat, with his 20 of his 24 points in the fourth quarter. I mean, Dan, I will admit, knowing I had this very, very early wake-up call today, tried to be responsible. I went to bed last night thinking it was a comfortable Pacers victory. They're up 10 heading into the fourth quarter. They had been up by as many as 20 points at home in that game. And then I wake up and I look, 103-100 New York. That doesn't look right. So, you know, I caught up. I watched the fourth quarter back on replay this morning. And like you said, that was very un-Knicks-like last night. I mean, I got to say I'm really impressed. I know wherever our guy Vlad is on vacation, I'm sure he'll be back next week on Sports Day or this coming weekend. Because he's thrilled about his Knicks showing some. Because, you know, you talk about backs against the wall. You drop the first two games at home. Yeah. Then you've got to go into Indiana to, you know, and the series is far from over. Indiana still has the edge, of course. You know, they can, a couple nights from now, they can take a 3-1 commanding lead in the series. But for the Knicks to go in there and breathe some life back into that series, completely negating the Pacers, who completely lost their composure in that fourth quarter. And Karl Anthony Towns was doing everything. He was hitting threes. He was dunking over people, layups. He was dishing dimes in that fourth quarter. I mean, that was just an unbelievable display of clutch heart on his part and from his entire team. And so, yeah, we got a series again there, right? And I'm glad this is happening on both sides of the bracket in the NBA, because Minnesota was up against the ropes. And they got a blowout game three victory to make it a series again at 2-1. And, you know, the Knicks end up coming from behind last night. So, you know, and in the spirit of the NBA playoffs, which have been really good to this point outside of our Miami Heat in the first round, the NBA playoffs have been really good. Maybe we'll get a couple of, you know, six-ish, seven-game series in the East and West before we hit the finals.
I'll tell you, these playoffs, both NHL and NBA, are unpredictable, although tonight might be a little more predictable. Let's hope so, that the Panthers can take care of business. Once again, happy Memorial Day. If you're working today, hey, you're not alone. Alex Dono, myself, Dan Day, we are with you till 10 o'clock today. Joe Rose, he is in France with his lovely wife. They're having a great time, I'm sure.
How long is he going to be there? Because I'm gonna be there in like 5 days. Okay? Should I call Joe and say, hey, like, you know, meet me at the Louvre or something?
Might want to hit him up. Yeah, the Lot de Triomphe meet up. He's going to be there this week, he said. So he's going to be in just Paris. So he's not bouncing around Europe. Yeah. He's doing the one city thing, so there's enough to do in Paris.
I'm doing a whole European tour. Well, I mean, mostly just France and Italy, but I mean, what else is there, right? The whole European tour, France and Italy, I'm going to be in.
That's what it's all about. You know, my thing now is, how long are you going to be gone for?
Oh, man, like 40 days, long time.
Okay, yeah, you will be gone for a while, and you got a place to stay in Italy with family, so that kind of saves and helps a little bit. So.
Oh, yeah, I could not pay for 40 days of hotels. I mean, I'm using my entire hotel budget on the 5-star hotel in Paris that I didn't realize was a 5-star when I booked it, but they're giving us the King's Tree. I have to answer the email today. They gave me four different options of which type of Mercedes they will pick me up at in the airport. I've got to figure out which one we need later today.
Okay, that's the important stuff right there on this Memorial Day, to figure out what Mercedes you're going to get picked up and while you stay at a four-star hotel in Gay Petty.
Five-star.
I'm sorry, five-star. I'm thinking I'm the nicest I've ever stayed at is a four-star. Four-star is nice. Really,
I mean,
nice.
Same here. I don't know if I've ever stayed at a five-star hotel, but here we go.
Oh, man. So that's one of the interesting things about Europe. You don't have to hunt too much, but you do have to hunt a little bit to watch United States sports. So you're probably going to be there most likely. Don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but when the Panthers are in the Stanley Cup Finals, you're going to have to search a little bit for a place to watch the game, or at least keep an eye on the game.
Well, it's not even that, because, I mean, thankfully there's enough streaming options. The problem really is the time difference, because let's say when a Stanley Cup Finals game starts at 8 p.m. Eastern time, that's, I think, 2 in the morning over there. That's the real issue, is more the time. Where there's a will, there's a way. I can find a way to stream all the games. The question is, will I be awake?
Okay, well, yeah, that is an interesting one right there, especially after a long day of sightseeing and wine and cheese and bread. Yeah, that'll get you a little bit, man. 2 a.m.
Yeah, man.
And then people are sleeping. You got to be quiet and everything like that. Yeah. So, you, if you're staying with family, you got to bother them. Like, you don't mind if I stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning and watch a hockey game until, what, 4:30, 5 a.m.? Yeah. And get up in the next morning.
I've done it before. The last time I was over there was it's been a while now, 2015, I think, 10 years. But I do remember a couple of middle of the night game watches happening back then. So we'll have to run that back.
I want to say I was in Rome one time during the NCAA basketball tournament, and they had games on in this little, just kind of a doorway, where you could buy sandwiches and Nutella. And I was just kind of like getting salami sandwiches and just watching games, you know, as much as I could, you know, getting around.
That is the biggest Dan Day move. Keep the salami sandwiches coming. I'm going to keep watching this game.
Come on. Cheering on my teams, man. You know, got that going on. But tonight we got a big one. It could be a big party at Amerant Bank Arena. 8 o'clock puck drop, 7:30 pregame right here, 560 WQAM. It is a closeout game for the Florida Panthers. Game number 4. Of course, there are some questions about the health of the team. Last game, Sam Reinhart did not play with that lower body injury. Jesper Boqvist comes in, gets a goal. He has been the super sub for the Panthers. But also, Mikko Nikola suffered a little bit of a shakeup. Paul Maurice was asked about, first of all, the super sub, but also about Mikko's health, and he gives us a quick update.
Yeah, we think he's going to be okay.
Second time now in recent history where Boki's coming to the lineup and had a big game for you guys coming off the bench. Just how impressed were you with his game tonight? Just how big was his game to, or goal to break the tie?
Yeah,
there?
It was really important. The game was pretty tight through two periods. When I say I'm impressed with his game, there's an expectation of what he can do. It's good that he's come in with Barkov, I think, in both games, because it's a certain style that he excels at. But as good as that is for him, it's also good for all the other players that aren't in the lineup right now. They see how important you are, how critically important you are. So you say to all those guys, you know, stay ready. And the other thing we say, well, you've been ready. You did it all year. We went through just about all these guys, played really important roles for us. But it's good for them, for the guys watching the game, to see how important it is that you stay right.
Paul Maurice also saying A.J. Greer, who got a little shaken up in the last game, he should be ready to go tonight. So that's good news that Mikko Nikola, A.J. Greer should be go tonight. They're going to have a morning skate today. Paul Maurice says they will update you after the morning skate on Sam Reinhart. He says we're probably not even going to make a game time decision. We're going to make an after the morning skate decision, which means, Dono, we know what that means.
Means you're telling me there's a chance?
No, I'm telling you there's no chance that Sam Reinhart's going to play tonight. There's no need to have Sam Reinhart tonight.
I hear you.
Not even waiting around.
He, you know, it was nice him being around the team, addressing the team in the dressing room before game 3, but he was in like workout clothes. Like he wasn't anywhere close to being dressed to play. I mean, I just hope, Dan, and I don't know the severity of Reinhart's injuries. Mm-hmm. That's a big mystery right now, but if there's a way to get him back for the Stanley Cup Finals, where you're going to need all hands on deck, especially when it comes from a goal scoring standpoint, which is what he really excels at. So, gosh, I hope there's a way to get him back in the lineup before this run is over.
Well, this run hopefully will continue tonight with another victory going into the series. Carolina, one of the most impressive teams on both sides of the bracket in these playoffs, but we know they have that history, and we know we have a history with them where we swept them, and their coach said, well, it technically was a sweep, but it really wasn't a sweep. Part of you said, this is going to be another drag-out brawl. Another part of you said, maybe we'll just continue on sweeping through whenever we play the Carolina Hurricanes. Brad Marchand was asked about if he were surprised at how this series has gone so far.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that the way the games have been played is really an indication of what the outcome's been score-wise. You know, they've been pretty tight. It just seems like we've gotten a couple bounces and you know, a couple lucky breaks here and there that have kind of given us a pretty good lead. You know, we've capitalized on the special teams, obviously, which is huge this time of year. So, yeah, don't expect that, but it doesn't matter. Like it's not going to change anything about next game. We got to come in and prepare the same way, and it's always the toughest one to get. So we got to make sure we bring our best.
That's Brad Marchand and the Panthers just saying we're one game at a time. We're not looking at any projections. We're not looking to, you know, of course you're looking to sweep everybody because you want to win every single game. But this Panthers team really does seem locked in, and as locked in as the Panthers seem, it also kind of seems like the Carolina Hurricanes are a little bit shook.
Well, something that the Panthers have done, especially these last three games, that's a little bit uncharacteristic is it's just felt like the last, you know, 180 minutes of hockey has just been one game, right? From game seven against Toronto, well, I guess like the last four games now, the last 240 minutes, quick math on my part, have really felt like four games where it's like one continuous hockey game because the Panthers haven't lost any momentum from game to game. It's just been blowout after blowout after blowout after blowout, which, again, like is unusual because this is something Paul Maurice stresses a lot, that like every single game is like an individual series within itself, right? I think we saw that from game six against Toronto into game seven where, you know, Toronto in that game six came down to Sunrise and really stymied the Panthers' offense. But then game seven, blowout city, and then that's the run that the Panthers have been on now for four games. So it's like up to this point in these last four games, it's been like momentum has carried over for Florida every single game. Is that going to happen again tonight? Or maybe the change of scenery for Carolina, not change of scenery, it'll be the second straight game in Florida. So I'm grasping at straws here, but maybe it's going to feel different tonight because usually the complexion is different game to game, but it's not been that way so far.
It has not changed one bit. This team is as steady as it gets. Paul Maurice asked, what did he tell the team after game three? He said he didn't really say much, and this team, it is player-led.
I go into the room and just try to be mindful that I tell the truth. So what we see on the ice or where they're at, be as concise as possible, be as predictable in terms of how long you're going to talk. You never want to say something brand new, right? The foundation, what you say on the first day of training camp has to be true in the last game of the year. That's the challenge. So at some point every year, the players take over the bench, they take over the room. Even when they know the matchup, if I didn't say a word, they'd all know going out who's going next. That's when it's good. You just try to monitor it. I've got about four or five things that I have to be right on or better yet, consistent with. And that, and the accountability of those things has to be true for what's true for Barkov has to be true for Stanisevich. Other than that, I drink coffee and swear.
He swears well. He's poetic with his F-bombs.
There's nothing better than when you're on a team like that where everyone is locked in on the same page. Like he says, they know before I even say it or don't even have to say it. They know, we know, we're all know who's in next up and everything like that. You just feel as though this team's got it locked in right now. And for this series, seems like the Hurricanes are just grasping at straws and trying to figure it out. And looks like Paul Maurice going to be drinking coffee and swearing for at least a little while longer.
I mean, you always strive to have a player-led team. And that doesn't take anything away from great coaching because great coaches know they know how to not be in the way. Like, you don't always have to be the alpha in that room. Like, you know, part of Eric Spoelstra's greatness during the big three era was not, you know, not over managing the superstars and over managing the egos. Cause to a certain point, like when you've got LeBron James and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh leading your group and strong personality like Udonis Haslem, I wouldn't forget about him either. Like you have to allow that locker room to regulate itself, right? Even, you know, some of the great Miami Hurricanes teams of 2001, 80s and 90s, like though you had guys like the Ed Reeds and the Michael Irvins, like really being the leaders of men in those locker rooms. So though that to me is the perfect mix. And again, it's not to minimize anything Paul Maurice is doing, because when it comes to his line changes, his tweaks, the way he does address his team, he knows how not to be too much in that dressing room and let his leaders carry through.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to overcook, but you really have to feel there's a good chemistry between Paul Maurice and the guys. We actually know there's a good chemistry between Paul Maurice and the guys. They like each other. They play for each other. It's all for one, one for all. And Paul Maurice reiterated that, saying he has confidence in his guys.
No, what we're really good at here, and you had Sasha Barkov up here. He's so good at tone setting. But it's easy for him because that's exactly who he is. That's his personality. So when we talk about handling our day, we've lived it for 3 years, so there's nothing new. I don't think the final score, the game got away from Carolina in game two, partway through it. We were really good early, and it got away from tonight. That's the series the way we expected to go, the first two periods. That's the series. So they aren't all fired up in that room. They're not just going to go home, get something to eat. We won't bring them out of bed too early. We'll do this whole bunch of stuff that I don't even know what they do at the other end of the building. To be honest with you, I don't go down there. They'll recover. That's what I call it. And then enjoy that day. Enjoy that day with each other. They're not going to be on a high. They're not going to be moving on. It's Saturday, right? Today? It's going to be a good Sunday. That's it. We'll have a good Sunday.
Hopefully we have a good one tonight. 8 o'clock, that puck drops. These guys, they're just locked in. And I also like Paul Maurice, honestly. I don't know what they do on the other side of the building. I don't care.
They eat a lot of Dairy Queen, it seems, on the other side of the building.
We talked about that yesterday. Apparently Brad Marchand is a huge Dairy Queen fan. There is a chance now, remember, if we win the Stanley Cup, that there could be Dairy Queen blizzards eaten out of the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, oh, that's a for sure. Like, that's going to happen if we win another Stanley Cup. And no, and by the way, I was looking at that. I haven't been to DQ. I think I've taken my son there but within the last couple of years, but I haven't actually eaten it myself in like 10 years. I was looking at the Blizzard menu online. It's pretty impressive. Like, there's a lot of good combos, like Snickers Blizzard, Heath Bar Blizzard, cookies and cream. If they win a Stanley Cup, I'm going to celebrate with a Blizzard.
I'm telling you. And for the longest time when I was a child, I thought Dairy Queen was just an ice cream soft serve shop. I didn't know they actually had food on the menu because my grandmother on the way there would always want to
stop. I don't
know
if I would eat that, if I'm being honest. I don't know. I don't know if I would eat anything off their grill. I'll stick to the ice cream.
Ice cream is what it's all about. It's going to be fun, though. Seeing tonight. Tonight's the one that I hope that we can just have some fun. Get out early. Hopefully the Carolina Hurricanes give up the ghost and we kind of just have a celebration, a culmination as we prepare to hopefully go to our third Stanley Cup final in three years.
What's the face-off time tonight? What are we looking at?
I mean, it's supposed to be at 8 o'clock, but does anything ever start on time? Only in soccer.
Can we go back to the 7 o'clock? I mean, is it that crucial we have to start this thing at 8? This is old man Dono speaking here. I like to have my night wrapped up by 10. It's a little hard with those 8 p.m.
The way the Panthers have been playing lately, you know, it could be over by 9.
True.
You know, we'll see how that goes.
It might be.
You know who's working right now? Mario Cristobal.
Who's that?
Mario Cristobal. He doesn't take days off.
Dude. I mean, I don't. I think when you are as dedicated to your craft, especially like the recruiting part of it, which never ends.
No.
I mean, it's you're always, if you're even like during dead periods, if you're not able to contact players, that's when you work on your board and you scout and you evaluate. I don't think Mario Cristobal knows like when the work ends and when the leisure time begins. Like, it all kind of just blurs together for him.
Yeah, I mean, he's even said it in the past. He's not really apologetic about it. He's had a lot of cafecito and just going out there and recruiting, and it has been paying off. he recently landed the number one overall recruit in the 2026 class. Now, I know we've got a whole season between then and there, but the overall number one recruit, an offensive lineman by the name of Jackson Cantwell out of Missouri. A lot of people thought he was Loctite in on going to Georgia. At the last minute, Hurricanes make a push, and he decides to come to the U. Jackson Cantwell is a big-time land because he's an offensive lineman. I get the feeling the one thing Mario Cristobal loves more than anything in the world, not just recruiting, but recruiting maybe a generational offensive lineman. I get the feeling that he goes to management or the president or higher-ups at Miami and goes, that's the guy I want. Some years the best player is a quarterback, a running back, maybe a tight end. 2026, it's an offensive lineman. He's like, that's the guy I want. If I could have one in every 5 years that we're going to open the bank up for and give the whole recruiting to, offensive lineman is for him. And I don't know if that's exactly how it went down, but I feel as though Mario Cristobal kind of targeted Jackson Cantwell as far as when it, being an offensive lineman and making it a priority.
Yeah, well, and I think any offensive lineman, you know, in high school, if you get recruited by Miami, like, you understand that's a good spot to play this position because the head coach is a former offensive lineman, former offensive line coach. The actual offensive line coach, Alex Mirabal, is really good at what he does. I mean, that's the duo that developed Penei Sewell at Oregon, recruited him and developed him. And it's also the duo that to this point has developed Francis Maui-Noa, who's probably going to be a first round pick next year, you know, after he plays his third year at Miami coming up. So, I mean, that was part of why Jackson Cantwell, you know, realized again, like, yeah, he had every school in the country would have taken Jackson Cantwell. Let's be clear. Like, he had his options. Yep. Literally 133 FBS teams would have wanted him, including Georgia. And obviously, like, Georgia's a great place to be. They've won championships recently. Miami hasn't done that. They're in that conversation every single year. But ultimately, for Cantwell, like, I mean, not only does he vibe with the culture in Miami, he really enjoys the campus. He enjoys kind of the plan that they made for Cantwell and his career development. I'm sure they're using like that Francis Maui-Noa model for him. Like, hey, we can get you developed in, you know, 3 years, get you ready for the NFL. This dude, Dan, is 6'8", 325 pounds. He's an absolute mauler at Nixa High School in Nixa, Missouri. So he's going to be coming down to the big city. And yeah, I mean, Mario Cristobal he's a really good recruiter and CEO of recruiting, because his staff does a lot of the legwork, of course. But when it comes to every position, he does a good job. But offensive line, that's his bread and butter.
And a lot of people were kind of criticizing Miami because possibly they might be giving him $2 million NIL deal. If they are, isn't that our prerogative, though? Isn't that a school's prerogative? If they have the money and want to spend the money on a player, why not? They feel as though, like, we robbed Jackson Cantwell of a decision because we paid him $2 million. And Jackson Cantwell, let's give him credit for showing a lot of maturity. He said the money wasn't the major issue and the reason why he came to the University of Miami. So that narrative kind of goes away very quickly. But if that's the deal, that's the deal. Every other school was offering him money, too. So let's not act like the U came swooping in to the not the number one offensive line recruit in the nation, the number one overall recruit in the nation for 2026. Everyone was offering him comparable money. So to say that Miami blinded him with cash and dollar signs, that's a little inaccurate.
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, like, NIL is part of the game right now, and there's no salary cap on that. So, I mean, you decide what a player is worth to your program. And, you know, and again, I don't know what the exact dollar figure was. There's a lot of rumors out there. And a lot of the people that spew this stuff out are bad actors who come up with these rumors. And also, no one seems to throw out what the number was from Georgia.
No.
Like, they act as if, oh, he could have gone to play at Georgia for $10, but he went to Miami for $2+ million. He was going to make seven figures wherever he went, believe me. And I can confidently tell you that Jackson Cantwell did not make his decision solely based on money.
No.
I'm also not stupid. I'm not going to say money wasn't a part of it, because listen, I mean, it's funny because college athletes, especially pro athletes, don't get villainized this way. Human beings in any walk of life don't get criticized for this. If you were to get offered from a different company 30% more, 50% more to do the same job, and you take that other job for 30% more, 50% more, whatever, in any other walk of life. You're a radio host, you're an accountant, you're like, oh yeah, well, of course, doing the same job for more. Any American would do that. Any human being would do that. But college athletes get villainized for that. But then at the same time, all this to say, it definitely didn't just come down to money for Jackson Cantwell, because the big money that this man is going to make, and he's going to be in the NFL someday. Like, Jackson Cantwell will be blocking left tackle or right tackle on Sundays in 4 years, right? That's when you really earn the big money. So he, believe me, he's a smart young man. He's also got, you know, really smart family members and advisors around him. If he's making his college decision strictly based on money, he's setting himself up to fail, because this is a decision where, yeah, you can make seven figures for the next few years, but you need to set yourself up to be the best possible offensive tackle you can be for the NFL. He decided that Miami was the spot that checked off multiple of those boxes for him, that he can come be developed by probably the best duo of offensive line coaches in the country, while also making a good sum of money. But again, he would be making seven figures whether he decided to go to Miami or Georgia. And the other ones, by the way, that were in it for him, I know that Georgia takes a lot of pride in getting players allegedly to come for what they call the Georgia discount, which is like, they brag about paying players less. Like, look at this. People come to Georgia just to win, to try to win titles. They make less money here. Okay, so you could talk about this alleged Georgia discount, but Ohio State was another team that was in the finals for Jackson Cantwell. They had a $20-plus million roster that won a national championship last year. You think they're bringing in players for discounts? Ohio State, and credit to them, they pay whatever it takes to put a great team together. Oregon with the Nike money and the shoe deals from Phil Knight. You think they're going to offer, hey, Jackson, I know Miami offered you allegedly $2 million. Why don't you come to Oregon? We'll pay you about $90K. You know, cut. So if you're talking about making the decision for Miami strictly based on money, what that comes from, Dan, is an anti-Miami narrative. People have an agenda against Mario Cristobal. They have an agenda against Miami. Anytime any other school lands a big-time recruit or a big-time transfer, they talk about the football fit. I mean, isn't Michigan stole away Bryce Underwood from LSU for, what, $13 million? Yeah. Why aren't we talking about that? No. That, oh, it's, he decided to go to the great football fit of Michigan. Oh, and by the way, they paid him like triple what his other school was going to pay him. The narrative always comes down to Miami. People love to hate on Miami with the all-about-money stuff. And fine, keep hating on us. Go ahead. Miami likes being hated. I'll take it.
It's funny you get that story about poor Jackson Cantwell. He's such a great player. It's like he's embargoed here to Miami. The guy was blinded by money signs. So why would he come down here, make money, work with a coach that is an offensive line specialist, with an offensive line that is great? Oh, yeah, and by the way, you're in Coral Gables at a top private university getting a great education, and you're in one of the greatest cities in the world. Poor Jackson Cantwell, almost kidnapped, it seems like. They make that story out to be. It's like, are you kidding me? Now, if you go somewhere, and I'm trying not to throw too much shade at a place, but like Ames, Iowa, I'd have been like, okay, that's a little strange. Maybe the money was involved in that, but that's just a narrative that's not right. And the same guy that goes, can't believe Jackson Cantwell and these college players, it's all about the money, Then you ask them, well, where do you work at? And they tell you, like, why do you work there? They offer me 25% more than my other job. It's like, oh, but you can do it. It's good. You're cool. You're the crafty one. But when a college or an 18 or 17-year-old athlete does it, it's disgusting. And what they're doing to these kids is disgusting. It's like, I don't think giving someone $2 million for the craft that they've honed is a disgusting thing at all, or however many millions of dollars, or however much money you give someone.
Yeah, I mean, we don't even know for sure, because guess what? These NIL deals, especially the ones that come from a private institution, the exact dollar figures are not reported. It doesn't stop people from speculating on that. And also, even sometimes if people get information allegedly like from the agency that represents a player, that's not always reliable, right? Because the agency might inflate the number, because then it's like, look how well we're doing our jobs. We got this guy a $2 million.
Right.
So you never know. You never know what's real and what's not.
And getting back to Jackson Cantwell, I don't know if you've broken down that much tape, especially of a high school guy that's an offensive lineman, but what are some of the scouting on him? Like, he's just big, strong, and got all the tools?
Well, for the incredible range and athleticism for his size, that's what makes him a five-star. You know, it's not only being a hulking gargoyle of an individual, but being able to move and get upfield. He's an elite run blocker, because his high school team in Nixa runs a lot. Like, they won their state championship game this past year. I think Jackson said this himself, I think they had like 57 running plays to like 3 passing plays. Yeah. So, I mean, that's one thing. Like, I know he's working on his pass blocking, and that's something he's going to develop. It's just something he doesn't do as much of in high school. But then the other part of the scouting report, Dan, it's like he has other traits from other sports that he plays that I think translate very well to the offensive line. He is the son of 2 U.S. track and field Olympians. Okay. I think his father even medaled in his parents are both elite Olympic level shot putters. And Jackson is he's got Missouri state records in the shot put. I actually heard him say that, like, his current best shot put would be a University of Miami record had he, like, done it. So he's about to I would say run track. He's going to throw on the track team at Miami as well. We expect him to do 2 sports here, to do track and field as well. And part of that, you know, Olympic lineage of his, at 7, actually not even 17, he's still 16 years old, Dan. He bench presses over 500 pounds reps. Like, we're not even talking about a max. Like, he does reps with 505 pounds on the bench. So the guy is just an absolute bully. So we'll see how that translates to Miami, if it's going to be someone who hits the ground running immediately. And I think he probably will, because, yeah. You know, you mentioned he's got another high school season coming up. He's going to arrive at Miami in January of 2026. He'll enroll early. He'll take part in spring football. I think there's going to be 2 offensive tackle jobs open when he comes in as a freshman, because Maui Noah on the right side, probably going to leave early for the NFL. Markel Bell on the left side, I think he's going to be out of eligibility. I think he'll be in the NFL as well in a year's time. And so, you know, Cantwell is going to have every opportunity as a true freshman to slide into either a starting right tackle or maybe starting left tackle job first year at Miami. And I think he'll probably be ready for it based on what I've seen from the kid.